VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hello and welcome to Danny in the Valley, your weekly dispatch from deep inside the Silicon Valley future machine. We did it, people. On Tuesday, we passed 100,000 listens, which, you know, for some might not be a big deal. For me, it is. So 100,000 thank yous to you, all of you. I really do appreciate you tuning in each week, even though you don't have to really tune in. You just have to stay subscribed, but that's beside the point. I have a lot of fun doing the show. I hope you're still digging it too. If so, as always, tell a friend, rate it, review it, share it, spread the word. Also, if you have any guests you want to hear, subjects you think we should examine, let me know. Email me at danny.fortson@sunday-times.co.uk. Get me on Twitter at Danny Fortson. I'm always up for ideas. Also, a quick note, in this unbelievable week of Facebook news, we will have a special bonus episode. In addition to today's show, the normal service, we will be putting out, should be, if all goes well, an extra bonus episode. Mr. Zuckerberg is keeping us all very, very busy, so keep an eye out for that. But now, on to today's show.
Yo, technology, what is it all about?
Currently, the internet is awesome and has done tremendous things for global society, but there's certain aspects of it that are broken, and that's because I think largely identity is broken.
This week, I met Joe Lubin, who is one of the co-founders of Ethereum, which, of course, is the world's second largest cryptocurrency after Bitcoin and the largest blockchain protocol. So Lubin has a super interesting backstory. He worked on Wall Street. He made reggae music in Jamaica. And just a few years ago, he happened into this Ethereum thing right after Vitalik Buterin, its creator, first surfaced the idea. And I know nowadays we hear lots of stories about your brother's uncle's barber who happened to bet on some Bitcoin a while ago and is now suddenly a millionaire. Well, Lubin is the real deal. His net worth is estimated somewhere between $1 billion and $5 billion. No one really knows how much Ethereum he actually has, but a lot. And these days he runs Consensus, which is a kind of a global studio that churns out Ethereum-based companies and tools all over the place. And around these parts, he's a bit of a geek rock star. I saw this firsthand at a Ethereum meetup in downtown San Francisco a few nights ago where he spoke to a standing room only crowd of what I'm guessing are coders, all guzzling very warm Stella Artois and inhaling boxes and boxes of soggy pizza.
Okay, so I don't need to do an introduction. I think you guys are all here standing outside for this man. So let me just pass the baton to Joseph Lubin.
Thank you, everybody. This is overwhelming. This is an amazing turnout. Thank you all for being here.
I have to admit, I didn't stay for the speech because the day before, Lubin and I sat down at Stanford to talk about the founding story of Ethereum, why he thinks blockchain technology will change not just the internet, but become what he calls the new organizing principle of humanity. We also talk about why they set up the Ethereum Foundation's headquarters in Switzerland, of all places, you can probably guess why, and why the coming regulatory crackdown doesn't worry him. So, without further ado, here's Joe. So, can we start at the beginning? Can you just give a quick kind of potted history of you up until you decided that maybe blockchain / Ethereum was the thing that you wanted to dedicate your work to?
So I've been a technologist for a long time. Did more than two decades in software engineering around robotics, machine vision, AI, other kinds of systems. Did some automated music composition. Towards the end of that aspect of my career, I worked at Goldman in private wealth management, essentially managing a software project, basically pure IT, but got exposed to various different elements from the financial world because I was working with different teams that were building tools for the private wealth managers. Right after that, I ended up being asked to be part of a hedge fund. So ran essentially a series of hedge funds with
a
partner.
So you went from IT to running hedge funds.
I started on the more technical side of that, but we ended up being partners pretty quickly on that sort of thing.
That hedge fund, was that for Goldman?
Had absolutely nothing to do with Goldman.
Okay.
No, it was after we shut that down, I moved into building different kinds of trading systems. So I had some freedom and was living in New York and spending time with a friend, and she had interest in creating a music career. She was already an entertainer and she knew everybody in the music industry in Jamaica. And so we figured it would be a great place to set up a tiny makeshift studio and pursue that.
And where in Jamaica was that?
Kingston.
Kingston.
Yeah.
And was this reggae? A dance hall?
She wrote all the songs. We brought in some of the best talent, young artiste, composer types and engineers, etc. And her style was kind of all over the map. So some reggae, certainly, dance hall, ballads and stuff that didn't really fit in a genre.
Right, right. So you're living in Kingston doing that. Is that when you came across this idea of Ethereum?
So I was still there. I was back in Toronto over Christmas break 2013. So that was about a month after Vitalik had written the white paper. I communicated with Anthony DiOrio, who is another one of the Ethereum founders. And he indicated that Vitalik, who I already had respect for but had never met, had written a white paper describing this new platform and should come and meet him. There's going to be a meetup on the 1st, January 1st, I think it was,
in
Toronto. So I spoke with Vitalik for a while, read the white paper that night. There were various different Skype channels that were all abuzz with this. And so the community was starting to coalesce around this project. A whole bunch of us ended up getting together in a house in Miami. There was just a buzz around it, a very intense buzz around it. So at that house, a bunch of us continued to flesh out the ideas of the project, both technical and business related. And Vitalik delivered the paper at the North American Bitcoin Conference towards the end of that week.
So what was your role in that whole situation?
So my role on the Ethereum project evolved over time. I never wrote code. I was involved in design aspects early on when a bunch of the bigger concepts were just being fleshed out, but I was definitely more on the business side of things. So we were going to do a token launch the Tuesday after that event, and a few of us, including me, figured that that could be complicated because we had a lot of people who were interested in the project, interested in trading some Bitcoin for Ether. It looked like it was going to be a lot of Bitcoin, therefore a lot of money, and it looked like Bitcoin was going to go to $10,000 immediately, and so we didn't have real infrastructure to handle that sort of thing. There wasn't a company, wasn't a cold storage hot wallet solution, there wasn't a website. Were we just going to give people an address to send the Bitcoin to? Who would be in control of that? Oh, and by the way, what would the SEC say? Would they consider it the sale of an unregistered security to Americans? And so it took us about 7 months to work through all of that.
So you're going to have a token sale and then you stop that?
Yeah, exactly.
And then you worked through all those details and then you had the token sale.
Then we had a token sale, yeah.
I did a bit of reading before. It was something like 30 cents per token, roughly.
Yeah, so the price of Bitcoin was dropping My guess.
These people are buying with Bitcoin, right?
You can only buy with Bitcoin. It was considered a currency swap in Switzerland. Right. It was a 42-day sale.
After Miami and in that house, you had set up the kind of headquarters in Zug in Switzerland?
Yeah.
Why?
Back at that time, Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, blockchain wasn't even a really surfaced concept as distinct from cryptocurrencies so much at that point. It was being painted in the media as something unsavory. And you could consider Ether a cryptocurrency, but it's just in the same way that you could consider a barrel of oil a currency. But Ether was a crypto fuel, first crypto commodity, and it was necessary to power programs, to power computational steps and storage operations on this new compute platform. Wasn't clear to us how various different authorities in different countries would consider that sort of invention. And we were able to have direct conversations with Swiss authorities, a country that cherishes freedom. I guess leadership there considers in a significant way good governance to be a service to the people. So they were friendly. And if you look at how Zug has proceeded, which is where we set up the Ethereum Foundation, they've continued to move in this direction. They're taking cryptocurrencies for government services. In Zug right now, they are using the UPort self-sovereign identity system that we at our company Consensus has created. It enables citizens to access government services and soon to vote in plebiscites.
Blockchain going into politics, essentially.
I guess you could call it that, first accessing government services.
Right.
And since then, we've had so many conversations with so many people, including regulators and leaders around the world, enforcement around the world, and done a tremendous amount to educate businesses, policymakers on what exactly this is and what the benefits are. And that's going extremely well in the United States at this point. So it never got too scary or dangerous for anybody in the United States.
Because actually, I think this week, the G20 is meeting in Buenos Aires, and they're talking.
I've heard that.
And one of the things on the agenda is trying to come up with kind of common sense regulation around cryptocurrency.
Well, understanding. There have been some letters written. We were part of a little group that was trying to put together a document that defined various different uses for different kinds of tokens, basically partitioning up the space of different token types.
Explaining that to regulators, so this is how
exactly.
Because you've also had folks like Google, Facebook, Twitter, they're all banning ads for cryptocurrencies. Does that worry you? Do you think that's appropriate?
So it's a little bit silly at this point. It is probably their legal departments being prudent. With respect to regulation of utility tokens in the United States, as well as tokenized securities, we are comfortable with how things are proceeding. The regulators are gaining a deep understanding of the space. They're doing valuable and prudent things in terms of messaging to the space that certain kinds of things will not be tolerated. The problem, essentially, there have been information asymmetries that people have taken advantage of for millennia. The problem in our space is that there's low barrier to entry to do such a thing, and the context is global, so it can be really impactful. It makes sense for regulators in various jurisdictions to make statements or enter into enforcement actions that cause various different kinds of actors to pause and do their appropriate legal homework before they do anything.
Are you talking about, because there's a lot of scams, obviously, people are taking
advantage. There's a lot of scams.
At least right now in the evolution, the great projects are much less interesting than the scams in terms of media coverage.
Well, what are you saying about the media?
Well, it's true, right? I mean, if you think about how much money is being raised, I think it's several billion dollars.
If it bleeds, it leads is the ethos of that space.
Yeah. I mean, and you had just read the white paper. What is it? Was there kind of a light bulb moment, or why? What made you want to go pursue this?
I believe that I understood the profound ramifications of Satoshi's white paper, but Vitalik was the first person to express how to deliver the value of blockchain, the value of crypto economics. The value of cryptocurrencies was just one narrow application on blockchain, and so many more. So Vitalik expressed a scalable way in terms of human action where we could deliver all that promise, where that wasn't really scalable, built on the Bitcoin platform. That protocol was too narrow. You required protocol priests to implement every new use case. And so Vitalik described a vision, which was further elucidated and executed by a huge number of really capable people. That vision included a whole bunch of protocol priests at the protocol layer, continuing to evolve it towards greater security, greater expressiveness, greater scalability. And we're seeing some very exciting stuff that we'll see ramify this year. But importantly, a clean separation of all that stuff from the application layer, where millions of software developers around the world, without understanding the depths of the protocol, can recognize the tool chains and the kinds of patterns that are appropriate for developing decentralized applications on that platform. And so that's where we're getting the boom, really. That's why we have 100,000, 200,000 people who are technically capable, either making a living in the Ethereum ecosystem or very soon to be making a living in the Ethereum ecosystem.
Right. And just to go back to that house in Miami, that was a dozen people, 20 people, what have you. When you were staying there, could you envision that this thing becoming this global kind of movement?
Absolutely. That's why we were there.
And it was just heads down working?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Where we are today, Consensus. What is Consensus?
It started as a venture production studio. We brought a bunch of people together to build decentralized applications. Pretty close to the first to do that, or if not the first. We started building some things, an app store, an accounting system. We realized we needed developer tools, so we started building Truffle Suite, which has seen over 300,000 downloads at this point.
And what is Truffle Suite?
It's a suite of tools for software developers to build decentralized applications. We started to build out applications people might want to release. So one really early one was proof of physical location. If you wanted to make use of this application, you would have to download the Ethereum client to your laptop. You'd have to sync with the blockchain. That wasn't going to be viable for consumers. So we ended up building something called MetaMask. MetaMask enabled software developers to release their software in the form of a URL and consumers to use the software in the form of a URL in a browser, rather than worrying about where the blockchain database is actually sitting. Subsequently, we built a system called Infura, which handles an enormous amount of the traffic in the Ethereum ecosystem. On Ethereum, you have about a million transactions per day, and those transactions represent writes against this big global database that is Ethereum. But there are about 9 billion other kinds of things going on from the public ecosystem. Infura facilitates a lot of that. To put that all in context, Ethereum processes about twice as many transactions as the entire blockchain ecosystem, including Bitcoin, on a daily basis. And it does so much less expensively. If you add the other 9 billion things that are going on, that's a lot of activity. Yeah. So,
understatement.
So we had the venture production studio. In addition to infrastructure, we built core components at the application layer, things like the Uport self-sovereign identity system, a very closely associated reputation system, bounty system in the form of the bounties.network and Gitcoin that incentivizes open source developers to do that work, a decentralized governance tool called GovernX, an accounting system called Balance3. So those kinds of components can be used by other projects in that niche. And we've got about 25 different projects that are open platforms that lots of different actors can participate on, where there isn't a dominating controller or monetizer.
So effectively, you're creating OSs for different industries.
Protocol-based open platforms, yes, exactly.
Right.
Right. So in addition to that, we do work with enterprises and governments around the world. So we've got a big group called Solutions that does delivery of software and advisory work, a bunch of different regional offices around the world. And we've worked in energy, supply chain, banking, insurance, healthcare, and education. And we've done significant government work in land registry. So there are three of those projects. We were named manager of the EU blockchain advisory, helping with thought leadership around blockchain. We did one project with the Monetary Authority of Singapore, which is a real-time gross settlement system, and taking that infrastructure and bringing it to other contexts as well.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right now, obviously, Facebook is in a bit of bunch of hot water over politics, how it works, all that stuff. The heart of that issue is the ad-driven internet and how that functions. Can blockchain remake the internet and how it works?
That is the thesis, that Web 3.0, the decentralized World Wide Web, will be an evolution. It'll still just be the web, but the ways that we represent and control aspects of our identity can be very different. GDPR in the European Union and Facebook everywhere and other situations are bringing this to focus. Currently, the internet is awesome and has done tremendous things for global society, but there's certain aspects of it that are broken. And that's because I think largely identity is broken. So we've built this system that enables people to upload aspects of their identity, retain full control over those things. They are encrypted, but selectively and granularly disclosable in situations that people designate. So we think that's a better kind of situation than spraying aspects of our identity everywhere and having other people monetize them and others not secure them as well as we would like them to secure them. When we get UX right, when we get scalability sufficient, we think we'll be able to offer different ways of presenting services to consumers.
Do you have a lot of refugees, for lack of a better word, from Silicon Valley, from the big tech guys being like, well, I've been inside that machine. I don't like how that's working. I'm going to go do this. This is more interesting.
Trying to figure out the best way to respond to that. Some of the leading thinkers of the legacy economy have indeed either left their institutions to do their own thing, or some of them have certainly joined consensus from the banking industry, from the insurance industry, from accounting, etc.
Big tech?
Big tech, sure, absolutely. In particular, I don't want to be too mean to their former companies, but yeah, absolutely.
How do people get paid in consensus?
Money.
So they're on salary.
Yeah, so we, for quite a while, we're paying in cryptocurrencies. We're still doing that a tiny bit, but we've grown so fast and have built a pretty complicated global organization that we need to rely on legacy infrastructure to efficiently pay people. It's sad and a bit embarrassing for us that we can't, for me anyway, that we don't yet have a fluid way of interacting with the kinds of bookkeeping and accounting systems that we need to use as a company in 2018 or a set of companies in 2018 in different jurisdictions. But we've built Balance 3, which is an accounting system. It's focused on blockchain-based entities and tokens right now. We're looking to build infrastructure by which we can operate fully in a Web3 world or a fully decentralized protocol world. We effectively have to pioneer what it is to be a company in this new space, and we're going to externalize all those tools once we make them work for ourselves.
And so what is consensus today in terms of headcount and offices, et cetera?
700 people in 30 countries, a bunch of different offices around the world.
And do you live in any one place in particular, or do you just...
Yeah, seat 2A.
So do you actually have a base?
I stole that from Andrew Keys, or maybe Jeremy Miller, he uses that term. A bunch of us live on airplanes and in airports, a ton of travel. And I live in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, New York.
Which is where the main office is in the very in
it's a where,
graffiti.
It's where we have a lot of people come to work. We move around a lot, but yeah, the bulk of people come to work in Brooklyn.
And this idea that, you know, the Puertopia in Puerto Rico, there's people like Brock Pierce who's setting up a kind of trying to like buy a piece of land, set up a kind of crypto society.
Uh-huh.
Does that appeal at all? Do you think that's a crazy idea? Or
I think what would appeal, and we certainly have people involved in that situation. What does appeal is bringing real economic change and opportunity to situations that need it, wherever it is in the world. In Puerto Rico, I don't think it's all that attractive, and I'm not sure Brock is even espousing this, but if we focus on building some businesses there, if we focus on doing education there, if we focus on hiring there, then I think that's going to be great for the local economy.
And I believe at the founding, there was a big debate about whether to make Ethereum a nonprofit or for-profit. Where did you fall on that, and did you think it ended up in the right?
So it was a long-running discussion. It wasn't at the founding. It sort of emerged over the ensuing months. Everyone was pretty much on board with being crypto Google, and that meant that we would create this open source protocol, we would gift it to the world, we would put it under a foundation, and that same group of people would go on to build different products, some of them for profit. It turned out that that group of people didn't foresee working together warmly long term, but we all still do see each other around the world, and pretty much, I think we're all quite friendly or very friendly, and the Ethereum ecosystem is astonishingly positive and friendly and collaborative compared to some other ecosystems. But it did become clear that we needed to shrink up the mission and just focus on the protocol. We created the foundation to do exactly that, to shepherd the protect the continuation of the protocol. And Vitalik, as chief scientist on the project, has done an astonishing job of leading by doing, leading by example. He doesn't ever tell anybody what to do. When protocol decisions are in his purview, he sources information broadly and takes part in making decisions. And we all indicated that we're free to go off and do what we want to do. It's just an open source project with a whole bunch of people who were passionate about the potential of it. A number of us have continued in our different directions, pretty much continuing in the vision of the original project.
Building the crypto Google with lots of stuff.
Well, lots of people are building different ventures in the space, and we need so many more businesses in the space. There's no way that a platform like this can become significant unless it attracts a huge amount of entrepreneurial, technical interest and value in the form of money into the ecosystem.
Yeah. Were you involved in the, I think it's called the Ethereum Enterprise Alliance, in setting that
Indeed,
up?
Indeed, yes.
So what is that? Why did you set it up and why is it important?
So we do a lot of work, as I indicated, with different companies around the world, a bunch of banks and other kinds of entities. And there were a bunch of others that we were talking to that we weren't working directly with. In all these situations, there were teams that were building on Ethereum because it was and remains by far the most expressive decentralized application platform. What they had to do at that point was download the Ethereum code, usually in the form of the Go implementation, Geth, and roll their own enterprise-friendly extensions to it, do certain tweaks. JP Morgan worked with Jeff Wilke and team to produce Quorum, which is an enterprise-friendly version of Ethereum, and there were a whole bunch of other fit-for-purpose things. We did some. Jeremy Miller at Consensus began to have conversations with all these different groups about the fact that wouldn't it be nice if we just standardized on an enterprise edition of Ethereum. So Vitalik was also thinking in that direction and talking to a few people. And so those discussions were proceeding already at the Ethereum Foundation level, but they weren't, I think, moving very quickly. There were certain resistances, not by Vitalik, that made it difficult to move that forward quickly with the different groups that we were talking with. In a pretty intense effort at the start of 2017, we and others put together, this foundation put together, a legal infrastructure by which all these different organizations could come together and not worry about IP issues, and basically create a discussion format where we could define specifications for enterprise-friendly Ethereum. So it was all about the protocol level, and that's been going really well. Ron Resnick, the new executive director of the EEA, has indicated that we're probably going to release specs, which are getting very mature, within maybe a month or two. What's really interesting and sort of unexpected was that because of the trustworthy nature of blockchain systems, where it represents a context where different actors who normally build siloed systems for themselves can get together and build shared infrastructure, so entire industries can do that. We're seeing all these working groups pop up for banking, for insurance, for advertising technology, for healthcare, for legal, and they are talking about specifications for shared infrastructure, and it's a good place for them to build shared infrastructure. And so I think we're at around 440 companies. Our friends at Hyperledger, I think, are also growing, but right. I think by company count, Ethereum Alliance is larger.
Have you sold any of your Ether?
I sell some to pay some expenses.
But you still have most?
No comment.
Fair enough. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening. As ever, I appreciate you tuning in, downloading, etc. Thank you to Joe for carving out a bit of time in what is a very busy schedule, flying around the world, spreading the gospel of Ethereum. And also for having me along to the meetup and the soggy pizza. I ate a lot of it, but I needed it. It was a long cycle home. You can find me, as you always can, in the newspaper at the Sunday Times, online, thetimes.co.uk, on Twitter at Danny Fortson, email danny.fortson@sunday-times.co.uk. We will be back next week with another edition. Until then, have a fabulous, fabulous weekend.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.